by regularly attending the Srimad Bhagavatam class and by rendering service unto the pure devotee, all that is troublesome to the heart is almost completely destroyed, and loving devotional service unto the personality of God, at whose worship with transcendental songs becomes established as an irrevocable fact. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We're continuing our reading from the 8th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Who's speaking? Today's verse, who's speaking? Swayambhuva Manu, yes. Have to keep track of who's speaking, where they are, who they're speaking to. Ultimately, of course, they're speaking to us. So, yes, I'm just saying, but I'm saying ultimately they're speaking to us, but we have to keep track of who's speaking and to whom. So today, Swayambhuva Manu is on the banks of which river? It was just mentioned. You have to keep track of what's going on. What's the name of it? Sunanda, yes. And as Amala Bhakta pointed out, he's actually speaking to himself. So if he's speaking to himself, how do we know what he's saying? How do we know? Yeah. It's mentioned he was standing on one leg for 100 years, and he was murmuring to himself. So how do we know? Yeah, when you stand around murmuring, I don't know what you're saying. How do we know what Swayambhuva Manu is saying if he's standing on the bank of a river murmuring to himself? Kriya Shakti gave a possible answer. His wife was there. Yes, his wife was there. That's one possible answer. Another possibility is that he could have told somebody later on what he was saying to himself. Other possibilities, as Satya Chinoy pointed out, the devas know. And ultimately, the super soul knows everything, isn't it? So the point is, we should always be conscious of the fact that there's nothing you can say or do or even think that is not known. So we have to act in that way. That everything that you do, everything that you say, and even everything that you think is actually recorded somewhere by someone. And that's why we say here in America, you can fool all of the people some of the time. You can fool some of the people all of the time, but you can't fool Krishna even one time. So don't try. This is the beginning, actually, of spiritual life, to appreciate this fact that God is omniscient, knows everything that we've done in the past, everything that we're doing now, everything we're planning to do in the future. Krishna knows. So this is an impetus for surrender. If the criminals in the United States knew that the government was onto them for everything they've done in the past, everything they're doing now, everything they would probably, you know, gradually cease their criminal activities. So this is the point for us. If you become conscious of the fact that God is aware of everything that you've done, everything that you're doing now, and everything that you plan to do in the future, then it makes you a little bit more circumspect about your activities. Okay? So let's get into the verse. Atmavasyam idam vishvam yat kinchit jagatyam jagat tena chaktena punjita ma grida kasya svid dhanam. Atma vasyam idam vishvam yat kinchit jagatyam jagat tena taktena bhunjita ma gridakhasya svidhanam. Atma vasyam idam vishvam yat kinchit jagatyam jagat tena chaktena bhunjita magrirakasya svidhanam. Atma vasyam idam vishvam Yatkinchit jagatyam jagat. Tena taktena punjita. Magridakasya svidhanam. Please chant. Atma vasyam idam vishvam. Yatkinchit jagatyam jagat. Atma vasyam idam vishvam. Yatkinchit jagatyam jagat. Tena taktena punjita. Magridakasya svidhanam. Atma vasyam idam vishvam. Yatkinchit jagatyam jagat. Tena taktena punjita. Magridakasya svidhanam. Vaishnavins. Atma vasyam idam vishvam. Yatkinchit jagatyam jagat. Tena taktena punjita. Magridakasya svidhanam. How many have read the Sri Ishapanishad? So if you have read the Sri Ishapanishad, you should recognize this verse. It's exactly the same as Mantra 1 except for the first line. So Swayam Bhuva Mani is establishing here a universal principle. So we should take note. Prabhupada has written a very lengthy purport, which when Prabhupada selects a verse to write a lengthy purport on, it means really pay attention. So try to hear. Atma. The super soul. Avasyam. Living everywhere. Idam. This universe. Vishvam. All universes. All places. Yat. Whatever. Kinchit. Everything that exists. Jagatyam. In this world. Everywhere. Jagat. Everything. Animate and inanimate. Tena, by him. Tyaktena, allotted. Punjitaha, you may enjoy. Ma, do not. Gridaha, accept. Kasya swit, of anyone else. Dhanam, the property. Srila Prabhupada's translation for this verse. Within this universe, the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his super soul feature is present everywhere, wherever there are animate or inanimate beings. Therefore, one should accept only that which is allotted to him. One should not desire to infringe upon the property of others. Please repeat. Within this universe, the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his super soul feature is present everywhere, wherever there are animate or inanimate beings. Therefore, one should accept only that which is allotted to him. One should not desire to infringe upon the property of others. Srila Prabhupada's purport. And again, it's kind of lengthy. There are usually two ways of doing this. You can read the entire thing and then make comments on it, or you can pick points as you go along and comment. I prefer to first, because this way you keep track of Prabhupada's train of thought. Not to criticize anybody who does it another way, but that's the way I prefer to do it. So I'm going to read the entire purport, then we'll go back and try to pick out some points that we can discuss. Having described the situation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead as transcendental, Swayam Bhuva Manu, for the instruction of the sons and grandsons in his dynasty, is now describing all the property of the universe as belonging to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Manu's instructions are not only for his own sons and grandsons, but for all of human society. The word man, or in Sanskrit, manushya, has been derived from the name Manu. for all the members of human society are descendants of the original Manu. Manu is also mentioned in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 4, text 1, where the Lord says, Imam vivasate yogam proktamam aham yavyam vivasvan manvai praha manur ikshvakave bravid. Translation, I instructed this imperishable science of yoga to the sun god Vivasvan. And Vivasvan instructed it to Manu, the father of mankind. And Manu, in turn, instructed it to Ikshvaku. End of translation. Swayambhuva Manu and Vaivasvata Manu have similar duties. Vaivasvata Manu was born of the sun god, Vivasvan, and his son was Ikshvaku, the king of the earth. Since Manu is understood to be the original father of humanity, human society should follow his instructions. Swayambhuva Manu instructs that whatever exists, not only in the spiritual world, but even within this material world, is the property of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is present everywhere as the Super Consciousness. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 13.3, Chaitragyam Chapimam Vidhi Sarva Chaitra Bharata. In every field, in other words, in every body, the Supreme Lord is existing as the Super Soul. The individual soul is given a body in which to live and act according to the instructions of the Supreme Person. And therefore, the Supreme Person also exists within every body. We should not think that we are independent. Rather, we should understand that we are allotted a certain portion of the total property of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This understanding will lead to perfect communism. Communists think in terms of their own nations, but the spiritual communism instructed here is not only nationwide, but universal. Nothing belongs to any nation or any individual person. Everything belongs to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the meaning of this verse. Atma vasyamidang vishvam. Whatever exists within this universe is the property of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The modern communistic theory and also the idea of the United Nations can be reformed, indeed rectified, by the understanding that everything belongs to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Lord is not a creation of our intelligence. Rather, He has created us. Atma vasyamidang vishvam. Isha vasyamidang sarvam. This universal communism can solve all the problems of the world. One should learn from the Vedic literature that one's body is also not the property of the individual soul, but is given to the individual soul according to his karma. Karmana daivanai trena jantur deho pataye. The 8,400,000 different bodily forms are machines given to the individual soul. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 18.61. Ishvara sarvabhutanam hriddesha arjuna tishati pramayan sarvabhutani yantara rudhani mayaya. Translation, the Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart, O Arjuna, and is directing the wanderings of all living entities who are seated as on a machine made of the material energy. End of translation. The Lord, as a super soul, sits in everyone's heart and observes the various desires of the individual soul. The Lord is so merciful that He gives the living entity the opportunity to enjoy varieties of desires in suitable bodies, which are nothing but machines. Yancharu dhani mayaya. These machines are manufactured by the material ingredients of the external energy, and thus the living entity enjoys or suffers according to his desires. This opportunity is given by the Supersoul. Everything belongs to the Supreme, and therefore one should not usurp another's property. We have a tendency to manufacture many things. Especially nowadays, we are building skyscrapers and developing other material facilities. We should know, however, that the ingredients of the skyscrapers and machines cannot be manufactured by anyone but the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The whole world is nothing but a combination of the five material elements, Tejo, Vari, Mardam, Yata, Vini, Maya. A skyscraper is a transformation of earth, water, and fire. And a skyscraper is essentially a tall construction of bricks. Although the bricks may be manufactured by man, the ingredients of the bricks are not. Of course, man as a manufacturer may accept a salary from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is stated here, tena chaktena bunjataha. One may construct a big skyscraper, but neither the constructor, the merchant, nor the worker can claim proprietorship. Proprietorship belongs to the person who has spent for the building. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has manufactured water, earth, air, fire, and sky. And one can use these and take a salary. Tena chaktena bunjita. However, one cannot claim proprietorship. This is perfect communism. Our tendency to construct great buildings should be used only for constructing large and valuable temples in which to install the deity of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then our desire for construction will be fulfilled. Since all property belongs to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, everything should be offered to the Lord, and we should take only prasad, tena chaktena bunjataha. We should not fight among ourselves to take more than we need. As Narada said to Maharaj Yudhishthir, yavad priyeta yajataram tavat satyam hidehinam adikam yobimanyeta sasteno dandam arhati. Translation, one may claim proprietorship to as much wealth as required to maintain body and soul together. But one who desires proprietorship over more than that must be considered a thief, and he deserves to be punished by the laws of nature. End of translation. That was earlier in the 7th canto, chapter 14, text 8. Of course, we need to be maintained in eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Ahara nijabhaya maitina. But since the Supreme Lord, the Personality of Godhead, has provided these necessities of life for the birds and bees, why not for mankind? There is no need for economic development. Everything is provided. Therefore, one should understand that everything belongs to Krishna, and with this idea, one may take prasad. However, if one interferes with the allotments of others, he is a thief. We should not accept more than what we actually need. Therefore, if by chance we get an abundance of money, we should always consider that it belongs to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In Krishna consciousness, very important, now Prabhupada is giving us direct instructions for our management of his society. In Krishna consciousness, we are getting sufficient money, but we should never think that the money belongs to us. It belongs to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and should be equally distributed to the workers, the devotees. No devotee should claim that any money or property belongs to him. If one thinks that any portion of property of this huge universe belongs to anyone, he is to be considered a thief and is punishable by the laws of nature. No one can surpass the vigilance of material nature or hide his intentions from material nature. If human society unlawfully claims that the property of the universe, either partially or wholly, belongs to mankind, all of human society will be cursed as a society of thieves and will be punished by the laws of nature. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swamini Tilamine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pasyate Deshtarine Om Agyana Timurandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So on Thursday, we spoke at the Bhakti House program, and I selected that verse from the Sri Upanishad Mantra 1, not realizing that I was going to speak this morning on the same principle. And it's actually a very, very simple principle to understand. We all know we're born into this world with nothing, and when we die, we can't take anything with us. Yet in the interim, we're all looking around trying to see what we can acquire, more and more and more. Those who are parents know, I've mentioned many times, it's a little humorous, but it's a fact, that the children, they're born with this acquisitive nature. Even as toddlers, they immediately start thinking everything is mine. Anything that comes in their purview, they hold on to it, it's mine. And sometimes it becomes a struggle to take it away from them, to give it to who it actually belongs to. So the parents then, from the beginning of life, they have to teach the child, no, it's not yours, it belongs to somebody else. Share at least with your brothers, your sisters, like that. But we're born with this acquisitive nature. We want to take what doesn't belong to us, even though we come into this world with nothing. So, and it goes on expanding, unlimitedly. As Vamanadeva said to Bali Maharaj, when Bali Maharaj was trying to encourage him to ask for more than 3 feet of land, 3 steps of land, he said, if a brahmana is not satisfied with 3 steps of land or anything that comes easily, then he will not be satisfied if you give him the whole universe. So this is our mentality. We're looking more and more and more. But here, this Ishavasya principle is reminding us that everything animate and inanimate that is in this universe is controlled and owned by the Lord. And ultimately, if you can't control something, you can't claim proprietorship over it. That's the point. Krishna controls everything. Therefore, he can say everything belongs to him. We don't control anything. Don't even have ultimately control over this body. We're born in a body that we have no control over. It just passes stool in urine, just like that, no control. Then gradually we learn control, and then again, if we live long enough, we lose control again. Reminder before death comes that you don't really have any control over the situation. It's an embarrassment for the soul, and therefore we don't like to meditate on it. But it's a fact. We don't even have control over these bodies. The indication is there at moment to moment. If we had control, who would ever become sick? But lo and behold, periodically we get overtaken by illness because we're not in control. We're not in control of these minds. These minds are racing like anything all over the universe. And it's a struggle to bring it back so you can concentrate on the task at hand. So we're not in control of the gross or subtle energies of material nature, we have to admit. But still, we soldier on trying to acquire and hold on to what doesn't belong to us. So the beginning of happiness in this world, the beginning of real spiritual life, is to accept these principles. This Ishavasya principle especially is very important. Everything is controlled by God and is owned by God. And as Prabhupada said, he gives us a salary. Which is Prabhupada's sense of humor here. He says, you can take a salary. Whatever Krishna gives you, naturally, you can take. Because, as we were discussing on Thursday evening, our bodily needs are very, very small. By the time you get to be an adult, what you need to eat every day is very little. You don't need to eat very much to maintain this body. And how much space do you need to sleep? And how much clothing do you need for this body? Very little. Our needs are actually very little. But our wants go on expanding. We want this. We have a nice camera, we want another one, right? You want a red, don't you? Right? You have a nice video camera, but you want a red. The latest digital, you know, everybody. I'm a photographer. I'm not picking on you. I have 3-4 camera bodies. I want another one. I'm already looking around. This is the latest and greatest. I would like to have that. That's just our nature in this material world. We keep experiencing that we can never be satisfied by getting the latest and greatest of this and that, but still we try because we are not connected to Krishna. Once we make that connection again to the Supreme Lord, then those wants will go away. We become completely satisfied. Prabhupada uses the example often of the child. The baby is crying, and everybody just keeps trying to pacify. Won't stop crying, but as soon as the child is handed to the mother and put on the mother's breast, immediately stops, completely satisfied. So the living entity, the individual souls in this material world are like that. We're crying for that connection with Krishna. And we're looking here, there, everywhere, trying to connect with this person, that thing, this thing. And we're not feeling any satisfaction. But as soon as we allow ourselves to be convinced to try again, to reconnect, that's what yoga means. Yoga means to connect. When we connect ourselves through bhakti yoga to the Supreme Lord, Then and only then will we feel the satisfaction that will allow us to stop trying to steal Krishna's property. Either individually or collectively, as Prabhupada says, we're a bunch of thieves. Whether you call it United Nations or whatever, it's still a bunch of thieves. We're trying to divide up the property of the Supreme Lord and become happy in that way, and it doesn't work. It doesn't work. We can only be happy when we're connected to Krishna, and when we use Krishna's property in his service. There will always be disparity materially. We can all never have the same amount of matter. It doesn't work like that, and we discussed that also on Thursday. If we do an experiment, if everybody in this room right now is given $10 million, woohoo! We're very happy. Come back in a year's time, would everybody have $10 million? No. As we were discussing, on Thursday, those with the Justin Bieber mentality would run to Vegas and blow it up their nose and smoke it and gamble it and it would be gone in like no time. Those with the Scrooge mentality would hide it under the bed and spend just a little bit and worry all the time somebody's going to steal it. Those with the investment banker mentality would, you know, get investment advice, put a little bit in real estate, some over here, some over there, and they would grow it. That's by free will. It's not that anybody's forcing anybody to have the Justin Bieber mentality or the investment banker mentality or the Scrooge mentality. That's our free will. So if we came back after a year, somebody would have $20 million and somebody would be in debt. That's the way it goes. It happens all the time. People win the lottery, $5 million, $10 million, $20 million, and then after a couple of years, they're actually in debt because they spent it all and now they owe money. So that's how karma works. We all start out equally when we come into this material world, but over time, based on our own activity and our own desires, as stated here, karma na daiva na trena. This is Kapila Deva speaking to his mother Devahuti in the third canto. By our own karma and by the supervision of higher authority, ultimately the Supreme Lord, we're given a particular body. The soul is injected into the womb of the mother through the semen of the father and comes out with a body based on the mother's body. If the mother is human, you get a human body. If the mother is a cat, you get a cat's body. Like that. And then you work with that body. So now we have these human bodies that allow us to do certain kinds of work that the cats and dogs can't do. Specifically, we can make spiritual progress. We can make a final solution to the problems of this material world. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, if we work according to his instructions, then we can make an ultimate solution to all the miseries of material life. But if we don't listen to him, if we act whimsically, then we will be lost. So these are our choices. Listen to Krishna, use Krishna's property in Krishna's service, and we will gradually progress to the ultimate goal of life. But if we don't do that, and Prabhupada is warning, even after we come to Krishna consciousness, we have to be careful of this mentality that things belong to us. Prabhupada says, Krishna will send money. Don't think that it belongs to you. Don't think that it belongs to you. Whether you're a Sankirtan devotee or a Tampa president or a GBC or whatever, sannyasi, money will come. Naturally, as we progress in spiritual life, money will come. But it's a test. It's a test. And that's why it's so important to live an open, transparent life as a devotee. If we don't do that, then the tendency is there. Prabhupada said in one place that material conditioning means as soon as I'm alone somewhere, I'm thinking of money and women. Or the opposite sex, let's say. But if you live in the society of devotees, you're protected. You're protected to a certain degree just by living in the society of devotees because you're more or less forced to live a kind of a transparent life. Money will come to the members of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, but we should always remember that that money belongs to Krishna and should be used in Krishna service. Now, sometimes even our members, they ask, why you people spend money to build temples? Prabhupada states here in today's purport, that's what you should do with money. Build temples. To glorify the Supreme Lord. Publish books that glorify the Supreme Lord. Hold festivals to glorify the Supreme Lord. Distribute prasadam in the name of the Lord. That's what money is meant for. Temple construction, book distribution, prasadam distribution, harinam, festivals. Not that I get money and now I'm driving a Toyota, now I can run to the Mercedes dealership and buy a Mercedes instead. That's not what the money is meant for. No, the money is meant for glorification of Krishna. So we have to be extremely careful because money will come. We've seen already in our society from very humble beginnings, one small storefront in New York City in 1966. Now we have a truly international society. I mean, whenever I meet people, I tell them, any major city in the world you go to practically has a Hare Krishna center. And you just have to go and knock on the door and say, Hare Krishna, and they'll snatch you. They'll grab you and they'll feed you and they'll, like that. We're truly an international society. Personally, I've been to quite a few of the temples in our international society, all over Eastern Europe, Western Europe, Russia, Scandinavia. Many, many temples are there. India. So, but still there's so many I haven't seen. I've never been on the African continent. I've never been to Australia, New Zealand. So we have hundreds of temples all over the world. But those temples are meant for one thing, for increasing Krishna consciousness directly in the members who are already participating on this path and for those that are newly attracted. Because Krishna consciousness is not meant to be kept locked up. The more we give it out to others, the more we increase our own consciousness of Krishna. So everything animate and inanimate is controlled and owned by the Lord. That means you have to treat everything properly, respectfully. If I come to your house and you have nice furnishings and I go around and I kick your TV over and I slam doors, and you would immediately ask me to get out. So same thing. When we're here in the temple or anywhere we are, everything belongs to Krishna. You should treat it respectfully. Don't go up to, you would never go up to Sura's car and just kick it. You wouldn't do that. So everything has to be treated with respect because, as Prabhupada states in the purport, the super soul is there. And that's especially important to remember when you're dealing with a person, another devotee, or even a non-devotee, or even an insect. The super soul is there, witnessing that interaction. You may be actually dealing directly with Krishna, not knowing. If you look up on the wall, there's a painting where Krishna pulled a trick. Radharani was so-called married to Abhimanyu. But she was actually, everything belongs to Krishna. She's Krishna's property. She's in love with Krishna only. But superficially, she's married to Abhimanyu. So Krishna snuck into her home and they were having their nice affairs. And then Abhimanyu came home. So Krishna transformed himself into Abhimanyu and told Abhimanyu's mother, "That's Krishna impersonating me. Chase him out of here." So she chased her own son and was beating him. And he's saying, no, I'm actually your son. And Krishna's laughing like anything. The painting is up there. So when you're dealing with Amala Bhakta, you may actually be dealing with Krishna. Where is the difficulty for Dwarkadish to come off the altar and impersonate any one of us? There's no difficulty. He can do it. Maybe he has done it so many times and you don't realize it. You think you're dealing with Aditi, but you're dealing with Rukmini. So keeping that in mind, you should always deal with everyone. The principle is Aditi Narayan. Treat everyone like you're dealing with Narayan. As we were discussing the other day, there are two mistakes you can make in trying to figure out where somebody's at as a devotee. You can make the mistake of thinking that someone who's not a pure devotee is a pure devotee. Or you can make the other mistake, that thinking a pure devotee is not a pure devotee. Which of the two is a better mistake to make? It's better, obviously, to treat somebody who is not a pure devotee like they are a pure devotee. Because then you will be more inclined to treat them respectfully and not commit offense. But if you make the other mistake, you're dealing with somebody who's actually a pure devotee and treating like they're not a pure devotee, then guaranteed you're going to make offense. So Vedic culture is treat everyone like you're dealing with Narayan. And Atithi Narayan. Atithi means, Titi means the right, the proper time to do something. Atithi means the wrong time. And what that indicates is if somebody comes to your home, it's the wrong time, you're just about to go to bed or you're just about to eat or whatever it is, and they knock on your door. The Vedic culture is not, what do you want? You're disturbing me. No, that's offensive. Vedic culture is three things. Who remembers, especially the new devotees? What is the first thing that you should do? Somebody comes to your door. Sweet words. My dear Prabhu, my dear sir, ma'am, how can I help you? Then you invite them in, and then second thing, a place to sit. And then the third thing, something to eat or drink, at least some water if you have nothing else. So this is real culture. And we should remember that because it's so easy to slip into the current Western mentality, which is get off of my property, get out of here. And Prabhupada noted that when he was here in the late 60s and 70s. He said, in my country as a sannyasi, I can go anywhere and still there is respect for the sannyas order. But in your country, I walk on somebody's property, they can shoot me. And that is the law in your country. It's trespasser, you can shoot them. So this is not culture. This is non-culture. Real culture coming down from Manu, as it's mentioned here, humankind, man, is named after Manu, and therefore we should all follow the laws of Manu. So Manu's law is, if you treat anyone in a bad way, there's going to be karmic reaction for it. Even if you look at somebody in a bad way, there's going to be karmic reaction for that. Some people are like that, right? You pass them, it's like, just for that bad glance. Previously, in previous ages, even a bad thought, you were responsible for. The famous example is the family of Parashurama. His father, Jamadagni, the mother, went down to the river to do some business, get water, whatever. And she saw one demigod. And she just in her mind, she was thinking that he's so attractive, wouldn't it be nice to associate with him? And the father was so powerful that he knew that. So when she came back, he told the sons to kill her. And the first son refused, second son refused. And then he told Parshuram, I want you to kill your brothers for refusing my order and kill the mother. And he said, I will follow your order if you will grant me a boon. And the father said, yes, whatever you ask for, I will give. So on the father's order, he killed the brothers and he killed the mother. And then the father said, now what boon do you want? He said, bring them back to life. But the point is that in previous ages, you were responsible even for what you were thinking. In Kali Yuga, if we were held responsible for our thoughts, we'd all be dead. So in Kali Yuga, you're excused from the things you think. But the things that you say and do, you're held responsible for. But the secret is, if you don't start to think properly, then you will guaranteed act and say things that are not proper. So we have to be trained. This is the duty of the spiritual master, the guru, to train us how to think properly. Srila Prabhupada's spiritual master, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, is quoted as having said that nonsense thought leads to nonsense talk and nonsense activities, which leads to birth, old age, disease, and death. So you have to arrest it here. Don't think you can get away with thinking evil thoughts about other people and I wish that guy would just drop dead. And you know, no. You have to be trained how to see everything as Krishna's property and see everyone as Krishna's property. So when you're dealing with your God brothers, God sisters, all the God community or outside of the God community, treat them like they're Krishna's property, which means treat them with respect, treat them properly. So there's a lot more we could say from this purport, but time is running out. We can stop here if there's any little discussion. Kriya Shakti had her hand up first.
Once Srila Prabhupada was asked, why are you building these temples? Why don't you already use buildings that are already there? There's so many temples that are neglected. And the man that asked the question was sitting with his wife, and Srila Prabhupada said, so why did you get married? And the man was a little bit perplexed, and Prabhupada said, because you want children. He said, there's so many children in the street that don't have parents, but you want your own. He said, so this is natural, you know, that we build our own temples the way that we would like to take care of them.
Yeah, I remember that. Prabhupada has a great, he's so sharp, great sense of humor, too. Who is next? Sachi Tenoy.
Thank you, Prabhu. About 100 years ago, more or less, there was a president in Mexico who used a logo for running for a president. And he used exactly about, pretty similar to this. He says, el respeto al derecho ajeno es la paz, meaning to respect somebody else's property brings peace. Very nice, but he didn't have knowledge of this, obviously, and he didn't follow up. And in fact, most of the presidents consecutively, year after year, they did the opposite. They took all the property of the citizens, let the country down. They enjoyed with their family, so much so that after that, before any president will come, they will check them out, how much they have before they come, because they will go out with huge amount of riches. So my point is that even within spirituality happens. So can you say that we have this great knowledge, we'll be the only ones that can understand this properly than other ones? Because even just to think that you're this body, if you think that you have this body and this is your property, you're wrong. Can you talk about that?
Well, these principles are so simple, a child could understand. But the problem is that we are impelled by the three modes of material nature. And as long as we remain conditioned by the modes of nature, even the obvious becomes difficult to accept and to live by. For instance, those who are non-Muslims think that the biggest threat in the world is going to come from Muslims. But the biggest threat for a Muslim is another Muslim. Seriously, you look around the world. You go to any country practically. The Shiites are fighting against the Sunni Muslims. They all say they believe in Allah. They're following the same scripture. But they kill each other. In Syria, they're killing each other because the president thinks that the country belongs to him. And they want him out, and he doesn't want to leave. So he'd rather kill his constituents rather than get out of there. And you go to Libya, any place in the world, there's always these factions. So why is that happening? And then not just pick on the Muslims, but in Christianity also. And the Judeo-Christian tradition, there's so many people fighting against each other. So this is what the material energy does. This is her job. If you don't surrender to Krishna, then she takes you by the ear, probably compared it to when he was in school. If two boys were being naughty, the teacher would bring them in front of the class and order them to grab each other's ear and then tell them to pull. And one boy would pull and the other boy would feel pain, so he would pull the other and they would just keep pulling until they would both start crying. So that's what the material energy does. If you don't surrender to Krishna, she'll make you, put you in this mentality that you're going to get satisfaction from pulling somebody's ear or killing somebody. And it just goes on and on and on. Madness. So to get out of that mad mentality, you have to be fortunate enough to come in contact with a pure devotee of the Lord. That's the only hope. Otherwise, even theoretically, most people understand the golden principle and this and that. They understand that it makes sense to live peacefully in this world and not take other people's property and this and that. But they can't apply it practically without the mercy of a pure devotee. Because the material energy will not allow you. If you don't surrender to Krishna, she will just continue to induce you to pull somebody's ear, to steal from somebody, to take what doesn't belong to you, to kill others. That just goes on because of the force of the three modes of material nature. That's what they don't understand. They're thinking that just by giving moral instruction in school or church, people will be good. It doesn't work like that. Because they're being impelled to act even against their better judgment. Like almost on a daily basis, some big politician gets dragged down because he had an affair with somebody, and then they know that it's not right. But they're impelled by lust to act even opposed to their theoretical knowledge. So you can't get out of that grip of the material energy without surrendering to Krishna, and you can't surrender to Krishna without the mercy of Krishna's pure devotee. All right, one more Bhrigupati, and then we'll stop.
Thank you, Prabhu. Nice class. Prabhupada was saying in the purport that money will come to the Krishna conscious movement, and it should be distributed equally among the workers. So what does he mean by that? Now, practically speaking, what does that mean?
Yeah, it doesn't mean that every cent that comes into the hundi, we say, well, there are 200 people in New York, let's divide it up into... No, it doesn't mean that.
What does it mean, though?
Proper society has a purpose, so the purpose has to be fulfilled. That's what the money is primarily meant for. But what Prabhupada meant that is that in our society, nobody should live like a king and somebody living like a pauper. Prabhupada used to say that whenever there's prasadam, there should be divided equally. There's equal opportunity for everybody to take prasadam. He himself said that example. When he only had a few dollars, he would have even one apple at a program and cut it up into slices and everybody would get one slice like that. Not that, okay, this person is, has this title, they should get three slices, and then that person only gets one slice. No. Everybody should be taken care of on an equal level in terms of their needs. But the society has to go on. That's the primary force of the money that comes in, to satisfy the glorification of Krishna by publishing books, by opening temples, by distributing prasadam, by holding festivals. Not that every penny that comes in, we divide it up equally amongst whoever is in this community. And no, not like that. Okay, Granta Rachimam Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Bhaktivinoda Ki Jai.